Humble our hearts before Almighty Yahweh. Kind Heavenly Father, each Sabbath we get to come before you and honor you, putting down the labors of the week and honoring you with our voices, with our praise, and with our understanding. And we thank you for that privilege, Almighty Yahweh, to do that. We know that it's a real privilege to be able to do such a thing among brethren each week, where there are so many that are meeting alone, who are struggling to understand your word, don't have the benefit of others to trade ideas and to help learn your truth. So we thank you, Almighty Yahweh, and may we be a blessing as well to those that are seeking truth as your word goes out. We pray that you'll be with us now and strengthen us in your word. Humble us and help us to always remember you, that you are the main reason that we're here and you are the reason that we're in fact alive today. We thank you and we ask for your blessings now on this service. In Yahshua's name we pray. Hallelujah. You may be seated. Before we get started, I should mention, I don't know if we've ever announced this, but we now are offering the video service, these services online on our website. I think there are three already on, so those that have had the problem of trying to join us and find that only, I think, 10 or 12 people can go on at a time, I think it's because of our bandwidth. It's our problem, nobody else's, simply because we're out here in the sticks and we just can't get any bigger pipeline. But you can at least download the message a day or two later. We're going to try to get everyone on within a day or two as we give them, and so that you can go ahead then and maybe even save it for next week. And although you'll be 1 week behind, at least you'll have a service to join us with each Sabbath. One of the strangest, if not most tragic and heartrending stories in the scriptures is found in the 11th chapter of Judges. Judges 11, and starting with verse 29, it's a man named Jephthah, and he made a vow to Yahweh. This man was grabbed by the Israelites because he was a good army leader. He had done some work with some renegades and was very successful. They wanted him to be a leader of their army, so he said, I'll make a vow to Yahweh. He said, if you give me the Amorites, put the Amorites into my hands, he says, whatever comes out of the door of my house to meet me when I return, I will sacrifice as a burnt offering. So we find in verse 32 of Judges 11, then Jephthah went over to fight the Ammonites, and Yahweh gave them into his hands. Verse 33, he devastated 20 towns from Aroer to the vicinity of Minnith as far as Abel Karamim. Thus Israel subdued Ammon. Very successful. One right after the other, falling like dominoes. Well, Jephthah, after the fighting was over, returns home. Back to his home. Who should come out to meet him but his very daughter? Remember the vow? Dancing to the sound of tambourines, so happy to have her dad back and welcoming him as successful in his endeavor. She was his only child. His only child. Except for her, he had no son, no other daughter. In verse 35, when he saw her, he tore his clothes and cried, "Oh, my daughter, you have made me miserable and wretched because I have made a vow to Yahweh that I cannot break." His vow. Was it rash? You bet it was. Brainless? Yes. Shocking and heartbreaking? Definitely. But did that have any effect on the vow itself? Not on her life. Do vows change with the circumstances? If the promise doesn't turn out like we expected, can we modify it? Kind of like the gambler who says, "Praise to Yahweh, Yahweh, I want to quit gambling. And he vowed to Yahweh, if you want me to stop gambling, let me roll a 6 or less and I'll stop my gambling immediately. Well, he rolled a 3. He looks at it. Now, I want to make sure, absolutely sure, this is really what you want, Yahweh, so I'll do it one more time. He rolled a deuce. Okay, Yahweh, how about 4 out of 5? Sometimes human nature is wanting to manipulate the outcome when we don't like the result, to make it what we want and not what Yahweh wants. In other words, is it really our will or is it Yahweh's will that we seek? Maybe it's our own. We're looking for Yahweh's seal of approval on what we do. So we manipulate. We bend the rules. We play a little bit with it. Well, we all know how stupid it was for Jephthah to make such a vow to Yahweh. You know, he didn't know what was going on. Whoever comes out of my door, I'll sacrifice to you. What a stupid thing to do. But you notice, he didn't try to excuse himself. He didn't go up to Yahweh. Yahweh, wait a minute. I didn't realize it was my daughter that was going to come out that door. And notice she didn't say, well, it's your vow and it's my life, so forget it. We look at this innocent daughter and we wonder, how could Yahweh hold Jephthah to such a vow? But he did. She goes up for a couple months into the wilderness and mourns her coming demise with her friends. But you know, if Yahweh had stopped him as he did Abraham from sacrificing Isaac, if Yahweh had stopped him from doing this, from carrying out his vow, it would have showed that Yahweh was weak and that he easily forgave foolishness. Yahweh would not have instilled the necessary fear into Israel, and the lessons of the seriousness of making vows would not have been seared into their hearts and minds. Sometimes it takes a very extreme measure to learn a lesson. And you know, parents, you could learn a boatload of lessons from this about being consistent, sticking to your word with your children. When you make promises, stick to it and be consistent every time. Don't change the rules all the time. Children, just like adults, will realize that your word is absolute, that you mean it, and that's the way it is. What you say goes. And parents will find themselves using the switch a lot less when the children realize that their word is essentially their command. And in the same eyes is the business end of the rod. Well, Yahweh has a lot of mercy for many things, but a vow is not one of them. You break a vow and you suffer serious consequences. He even warns us not to jump the gun, not to make a commitment unless you're 100% sure you're going to carry it out, no matter what. Ecclesiastes 5:2 tells us, he says, be not rash with your mouth, and let not your heart be hasty to utter anything before Yahweh. For Yahweh is in heaven and you're on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. He continues on, for a dream comes through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. Just blabbing all the time. Can't trust half things he says. He's just, you don't know. He doesn't stick with anything. And Yahweh says, don't be that way. Make your word your bond. And when you vow a vow unto Yahweh, defer not to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay that which you have vowed. Better it is that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Suffer not your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. Neither say before the angel, in other words, when you're in judgment, that it was an error. Well, I just made a mistake. I mean, yeah, come on. You know, give me a little slack here. Wherefore should Elohim be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? A similar passage can be found in Numbers chapter 30 and verse 2. Another caution about making vows. Now we're going to expand this on into other things too, but I need to lay the groundwork here on how important it is that your word be kept. Numbers chapter 30 and verse 2. It says, if a man vow a vow unto Yahweh, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Deuteronomy 23, verse 21 through 23. When you shall vow a vow unto Yahweh your Elohim, you shall not be slack to pay. For Yahweh your Elohim will surely require it of you, and it would be sin in you if you didn't pay, basically, is what it's saying. If you therefore shall forbear to vow, it shall be no sin in you. So if you don't make the vow, you can't create a sin. It's better just to be quiet if you're unsure. That which has gone out of your lips you shall keep and perform, even a free will offering, according to as you have vowed unto Yahweh your Elohim, which you have promised with your mouth. Interesting. This principle applies even to other commitments. We often, this happens quite a bit, where someone who's requesting literature, CDs, they say, well, I'm going to send a free will offer. I'll send you an offering. I don't have the money right now, but I will. When things are a little tight right now, but when I get a little money, I'll send it. You know what? Rarely do we ever get anything. Rarely. This verse warns that making a promise, even something that's maybe less monumental than a vow, like a free will offering, is still serious business to Yahweh. He still requires it at our hand. Leviticus 27. It's a chapter that translates the value of something vowed to Yahweh into monetary worth. You see, vows and dedications to the sanctuary were commutable to monetary payments. You know, had this statute been used with Jephthah, perhaps the tragic sequel to his story could have been avoided. He could have just paid for his daughter, pay her worth, which is explained later on in the chapter, Leviticus 27. But let's look at a few verses here. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when a man shall make a singular vow, the persons shall be for Yahweh by your estimation. You've got to estimate their worth. My father-in-law is going to sell a vehicle, and he had me go online and check the Kelley Blue Book of it. Get an estimate. You know, you've got to start somewhere. Well, Yahweh here says, these things have a value, and this is what they're going to be. He says, your estimation shall be of the male from 20 years old even unto 60 years old, even thy estimation shall be 50 shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary. What are we talking about? When you make a commitment to dedicate a person or something to the work of the sanctuary, if you want to use the monetary value of that, here's what it is. From 20 to 60, I find that interesting. Some people argue about the age of accountability. Over and over in the scriptures, you find the age of 20 as seen by Yahweh as an adult. Those under that are given some slack as far as certain commitments go because Yahweh doesn't deem them as maybe responsible as somebody who is an adult. So, here we have 50 shekels for those that are 5 to 20. And if it be from 5 years old, I'm sorry, that's 20 to 60. Now we're going from 5 years old in verse 5, even unto 20. These are adolescents, maybe down to children. Then your estimation shall be of the male 20 shekels, and for the female 10 shekels. This chapter is really about calculating the value of a person's worth, work. Younger people got a higher value than older ones. Males, twice that of females, if you read through it. In verse 9, it says, a clean animal offered to Yahweh cannot be withheld once it's dedicated. You dedicate an animal to Yahweh, there's no way you can trade in its value in any way. Try to substitute that animal with another, and you're going to end up giving both to Yahweh, it says. Both will be forfeited. Land, which is rightfully inherited by a man, if it's dedicated to Yahweh, isn't even affected by the Jubilee year. And that was the law. That's how important a vow is. You couldn't give it back. It doesn't go back to its rightful owner if it's been dedicated to Yahweh, if it's been inherited. But if it's purchased land, then the Jubilee kicks in. Then it goes back to its rightful owner every 50 years. Interestingly, verse 26 says that firstborn could not be dedicated to Yahweh because why? They already were. Firstborn was already Yahweh's. In fact, verse 29 was violated by King Saul when he refused to destroy all the possessions of the Amalekites and even spared Agag, if you remember the story. If they were to be put to death, they could not belong to anyone. Therefore, they were Yahweh's, and he didn't give Yahweh his due. He held back. Yahweh says, destroy them all, everything. Man, woman, children, animals, he didn't do it. Well, let's read verse 30 of Leviticus 27. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is Yahweh's. It is holy unto Yahweh. This fits in with the same thing, with the same idea of dedicating to Yahweh. Well, it doesn't have to be dedicated. It's like the firstborn. It's the first fruits, and it's already Yahweh's. Hold it back, you hold back what's Yahweh's. And if a man will at all redeem out of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth part thereof. If he's going to value it, then he's going to add 20% more. And concerning the tithe of the herd, or of the flock, even of whatsoever passes under the rod, the tenth shall be holy to Yahweh. And he shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which Yahweh commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. This next newsletter, we're talking about the feast days and how important they are. They were also given at Mount Sinai. People say, well, yeah, I believe in the Ten Commandments. I don't believe the rest of the Old Testament, but I do believe in the Ten Commandments and a few stories of David, Moses, and Daniel. You know, that's important. But the feast days, nah, that's part of the old sacrifices done away. That's what they think. And yet here we have everything given at Mount Sinai. As far as Yahweh's laws, the commandments, statutes and judgments, feast days, Sabbath, all of these were all given. And Moses taught the feast from Mount Sinai, Leviticus 23:44, if you want to look it up. Statutes and judgments at Sinai. And in fact, remember, Joshua also made a copy of all the law of Moses and put it on stones. We'll find that significant when it comes to the vow as well, because there are memorials, there are markers of the vow. We'll get into in a little bit. Now, a covenant is like a vow in that it is a binding agreement or a promise to do something or not to do something. Proverbs chapter 2 speaks of, for instance, the loose woman, but the lesson, of course, goes deeper. The desertion of her husband indicates she's forgotten the covenant of her Elohim. And she has forgotten that Yahweh enforces the vows. Over in Joshua chapter 9, here's another example of, you want some real high-powered instances of the importance of a vow, importance of an agreement. Here's another one. Over in Joshua 9, fascinating chapter of sticking to your covenant promise. This is called the Gibeonite covenant. Israel entered Canaan, you know, and Yahweh says, wipe out all the people. Take them out. This is going to be your land. I don't want these people in there because they'll pollute. They'll pollute your worship. They'll pollute your lives by their ways. So they started doing that. Joshua, of course, goes through, and remember, he fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. And anyway, here we find that Israel entered Canaan, destroyed the cities of Jericho and Ai, and the Gibeonites happened to be living there. The Gibeonites decided they'd rather survive than be destroyed. So to ensure their survival through surrender and submission, they pulled a fast one on Israel. By means of a ruse, let's look at Joshua 9, verse 4. And they did work willily, slyly, you might say. Wilily, I guess I should pronounce that. And went and made as if they had been ambassadors. Listen to what they did there. They took old sacks upon their asses and wine bottles, old, and rent them and bound them up. They took old shoes and They took old shoes and clouted upon their feet and old garments upon them, and all the bread of their provisions was dry and moldy. They made sure they looked like, man, they've been traveling a long time. They were just neighbors, but they were going to make it look like, man, they've been on a journey. And they went to Joshua unto the camp at Gilgal and said unto him and to the men of Israel, we come from a far country. Now therefore, make you a league with us. And the men of Israel said unto the Hivites, peradventure you dwell among us, and how shall we make a league with you? And they said unto Joshua, we are your servants. And Joshua said unto them, well, who are you, and where did you come from? And they said unto him, from a far country, long ways away, far country, and are come because of the name of Yahweh your Elohim, for we have heard of the fame of him and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and king of Heshbon, and to Og, king of Bashan, which was at Ashtaroth. Wherefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spake to us, saying, take food with you for the journey, and go to meet them, and say unto them, we are your servants, and therefore make you a league with them, a covenant with them. See, this is our bread we took, hot from our ovens and out of our houses the day we went forth. Now look, it's dry and moldy. And these bottles of wine, verse 13, which we filled, were new. And now look, they're rent, they're torn up, and our garments and our shoes are become old by reason of the very long journey that we've been on. And the men took of their food and asked not counsel at the mouth of Yahweh. And there was their big mistake. They didn't check with Yahweh. And Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live, and the princes of the congregation swear unto them. Big mistake is they didn't seek Yahweh. They didn't seek Yahweh. Ask for his guidance on what to do about these people. All they could do was take their word for it. But they came from a long ways away, and they're right there. Part of the enemy Yahweh says to wipe out. And they've created a ruse. Now what? What are you going to do? What are we going to do now? Well, let's find out. These people were sly. Yeah, they were. They were sneaky. And caused Israel to go ahead and listen to them and make a covenant with them. So, when it was discovered that the Gibeonites had tricked Israel into making the covenant agreement in Joshua 9:18, and the children of Israel smote them not, because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by Yahweh Elohim of Israel, and all the congregation murmured against the princes. They had to keep their word. They made a promise. They made a covenant agreement with them, sworn an oath to them by the Elohim of Israel. Well, now what do you do? Surely, if there ever were a promise, if there ever were a vow or an agreement that you could annul, this would be it, wouldn't it? I mean, these people came under false pretenses. It was achieved by the Gibeonites deceitfully. They didn't know, and yet they were still obligated because, number one, they didn't seek Yahweh. Number two, they made a covenant before Yahweh with these people in his sight. Even though it was their sleight of hand, it was clearly fraudulent. You can stake your life on the fact that if there were any loopholes, such as the fact that maybe the covenant here does not exactly contain the words forever, the Israelites would have seized on that. But they didn't. It wasn't annulled. Why? Verse 22, and Joshua called for them, and he spake unto them, saying, wherefore have you beguiled us, saying, we are very far away from you, when you happen to dwell right here, your neighbors. Now therefore you are cursed, and there shall none of you be freed from being bondmen, and hewers of wood, and drawers of water for the house of my Elohim. And they answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told your servants how that Yahweh your Elohim commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you, therefore we were sore afraid for of our lives because of you, and you've done this thing. And now behold, we are in your hand, and it seems good and right unto you to do unto us. And so did he unto them, and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel, and they didn't slay them. And Joshua made them from that day forward hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of Yahweh, even unto this day, in the place which he should choose. Kept his word. Now, they didn't fare so well. I mean, they became servants, basically, but he kept his word. He didn't slay them because it was made. The covenant vow was made, even though it wasn't right for them to do that, to deceive Israel. Israel entered into a covenant. That's how important your word is to Yahweh. It's ironclad. It's a binding commitment. And almost nothing can annul it. Vows and really are part and parcel of covenants. A covenant comes from the Hebrew berit, and that's where we get testament, the word testament. It's a will, a covenant, a testament, it's been translated, and comes from the word to cut. In the Greek, it's diatheke, and it's mentioned 300 times in the scriptures. It's important to note that not all covenants are mutual agreements. By that I mean, it's not, if you do this, I will do that. Sometimes it's all one-sided. A covenant in the strict biblical sense is not a joint obligation, but a commitment one makes to another. A covenant is a relationship by where you make a binding agreement to fulfill certain conditions. This was often sworn to and invoked in the presence of Yahweh, like in 1 Samuel 20, verse 8, a solemn binding agreement. This word berit includes the idea of cutting, a passing between two pieces of flesh. They would take an animal, split it down the middle, spread it apart, and they would walk between that animal. And that was what they made a covenant with. And the common word, the verb, is karat, and it means to cut a covenant. And from the verb, we learn that Yahweh takes the sole initiative in covenant making. When Yahweh's name was invoked and the covenant was broken, it was considered a heinous sin. Over in Ezekiel chapter 17, the prophet gives us a very interesting insight. Verse 12. Says, say now to the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon has come to Jerusalem and has taken the king thereof and the princes thereof and led with him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar comes right in and takes Israel's king, takes Judah, I guess, king, and all the princes, takes them to Babylon. And had taken of the king's seed and made a covenant with him, and has taken an oath of him. He has also taken the mighty of the land, that the kingdom might be base or low, that it might not lift itself up, but that by keeping of his covenant it might stand. So apparently, obviously, they made a covenant with Babylon and saying, okay, if you leave our country and don't devastate it, we'll go with you and be yours, basically. But the king rebelled. The king rebelled against him. And in sending his ambassadors into Egypt, they might give him horses and much people. Oh, didn't want to go with the Babylonian king, wanted to get out of there. So he makes another league with Egypt and says, hey, bring your army over here and get us out of this mess. And we'll make a deal with you. That didn't go. That didn't go right. As I live, says Yahweh, surely in the place where the king dwells that made him king, whose oath he despised and whose covenant he break, even with him in the midst of Babylon, he shall die. Didn't matter who it was. You're Yahweh's people and you make a commitment to a pagan king, you got to keep that commitment. Neither shall Pharaoh with his mighty army and great company make for him in war by casting up mounts and building forts to cut off many persons, seeing he despised the oath by breaking the covenant. When lo, he had given his hand and has done all these things, he shall not escape. Therefore, thus says Yahweh of hosts, As I live, my oath that he has despised, my covenant that he has broken, even will I recompense upon his own head. Very important that you keep your word. When Yahweh's name was invoked in a covenant and you broke it, he didn't take it lightly at all. Well, oftentimes a covenant was sealed with a gift. Give him something along with that to show a token of your commitment so it can be looked at and remembered. Abraham gave 7 lambs to Abimelech, if you remember, in Genesis 21, as a witness to the well that Abraham had dug and the oath they both entered into, calling the place Beersheba, which means the well of an oath. So he sealed that agreement and used lambs to do it. Sometimes they attested to a covenant by a monument, such as planting a tamarisk tree in Genesis 21, or a heap of stones. Remember Jacob's pillar stone to mark an agreement between Jacob and Laban? Covenants can be made with really between anyone. You could have relative equals, as we have covenants in marriage, where we see that wisdom will save one from the wayward woman in Proverbs 20, chapter 2, verse 17. And covenants also were made with tribes, between tribes and nations, like between the Ammonites and the men of Jabesh, 1 Samuel 11. You can make a covenant between a superior and a subordinate, as when Nebuchadnezzar imposed the covenant on Zedekiah in Ezekiel 17 that we just read. Okay, so how did they go about making a covenant in the Old Testament? How did they, what's the exact, steps that they took? Well, first of all, since a covenant was meant to be a permanent relationship, permanent deal, they entered into it after much prayer, much consideration, much deliberation, counsel, exactly what Israel hadn't done under Joshua. Remember, they just went ahead and made it with these people and realized, whoops, we weren't deliberate enough, we weren't careful enough, and now they got us. We're stuck. Sometimes they bring a witness in as a trusted mediator for both sides. A covenant was meant to be a public declaration of their intent. Depending on its importance, Yahweh was sometimes called to witness. Sometimes heaven and earth were the only witnesses. Yahweh, remember, he mentions that. Let heaven and earth be my witness. Sometimes Yahweh based it on himself as the authority. But the idea of, in weddings, we have witnesses. People stand up for someone getting married. We do the same thing to attest to the marriage vows. Often garments and weapons were exchanged. A garment signified who the individual was. Maybe it's something he wore all the time. Little Aiden likes clothes, my grandson. He likes to. The other day I was in there, and he's into red shirts. He brings me a red shirt, and he brings me another red shirt, and another red shirt. I think that was seven of them by the time he was all done. Well, I think of red shirts, I think of Aiden. That's what these people were doing. They make a covenant, they would give a part of their clothing. Okay, that's them, and I've got your clothes, your shirt or whatever, and so I know that this is covenant's binding with you. So that's what they did. A garment signified the individual. Sometimes tribes would wear clothing. It would readily be identifiable. And this kept the parties ever mindful of their commitment. The belt or girdle would be exchanged sometimes, signifying my strength is your strength. All sorts of ways you can confirm or identify a covenant. Anyway, they split the animal in two. They would stand in the midst of these split parts, thus representing that the animal had given up his life. Blood had to be shed for this covenant. So I'll give up my life to maintain this covenant as well. That's how serious it was. There was often an exchange of a list of all the assets and the liabilities of each covenanting party as a united effort to show that they share in each other's belongings and burdens. And then sometimes you have a formal exchange of the blessings and cursings that was made public to the people. Yahweh did that back in Deuteronomy. Remember 26, somewhere in there? The blessings and cursings. The very first covenant we find in the scriptures is what's commonly called the Edenic covenant, Genesis 1. Yahweh deals with man by covenants. That's how he does it. Make an agreement. Chapter 1, verse 26. Yahweh said, let us make man. Elohim said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So Yahweh created man in his own image. In his image, Elohim created him. Male and female created he them and blessed them. And Yahweh said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over every living thing that moves on the earth. So this was a charge Yahweh gave. And Yahweh said, behold, I have given you every... This is Yahweh's covenant with man, by the way. I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of the tree, yielding seed, and it shall be for meat, for food, the seed that I've given you. And to every... that's interesting, too, because now they're coming up with all sorts of seedless stuff, isn't it? Seedless watermelons, seedless grapes... Seedless apples. I don't know if I haven't seen one of them yet. But Yahweh says he's going to give us food, the fruit of the tree that yields seed. And now we're tampering with that. No seeds. Someone once asked me, well, I can't eat bananas. I said, why not? There's no seeds in them. Well, there is, but you got to look, the little black dots, you got to look closely. Anyway. And then he goes on, he says, to every beast of the earth and to every fowl of the air and to everything that creeps upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given you every green herb for meat or for food. And it was so. And Yahweh saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, and the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So Yahweh said, this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to give you food. You can eat this. You can do this. And you can have the earth. You can... replenish, multiply, this sort of thing. It was a covenant. Chapter 2, verse 16. Read just two verses here. And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die. He provided everything necessary for human subsistence in that garden where man was innocent of all sin. Think about it. No sin. Only one stipulation. Don't eat of that tree over there. See that tree there? Well, Eve says, don't touch it. He never said that. Don't eat it. Don't eat anything off that tree. And I'll provide everything else. You're going to have a life in paradise. What more do you want? As long as you don't eat of that tree. What typically will happen if you bring a child into a room full of toys and say, see all these toys? You can play with all these toys. See that closet over there, that closet door? Don't go in that closet. Whatever you do, you can play with all these toys. Don't go in that closet. And you leave. What's he going to do? He might push a truck around or whatever for a minute. Heads right for that closet. Goes exactly where you told him not to go. And that's what our parents did, our first parents. Man's life in Eden was idyllic. Living in a perfect environment. They had congenial employment, perfect companionship. Even Yahweh came down and talked to them. Man, what more would you want? Adam was appointed the gardener. Wow, I'd like to be what is your job? I'm the gardener of the Garden of Eden. Wow. Now that's cool. He was told to dress it and keep the garden and be fruitful and multiply. Just replenish the earth. Subdue the earth. That one prohibition, that tree over there, was a test. It was a test of his loyalty and love for Yahweh. Yahweh didn't have to put that tree there. It's there on purpose to test our original parents. The test itself tells us that man was made a moral creature, accountable to Yahweh, responsible for his actions, and answerable to the one who made him. You know, that kind of disproves the old popular notion that given the perfect environment, man will behave in morally acceptable ways. It kind of dynamites the excuse that people who live in poverty say, well, if we just had what everybody else had, we wouldn't be doing these things like stealing and lying and cheating and all that. Not so. Not so. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? After man's fall came another covenant, the Adamic covenant, Genesis 3:16. Covenant Yahweh made then with Adam. Now we got some different stipulations. He had it made, but he blew it. She blew it. And so, in Genesis 3:16-19, unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In sorrow you shall bring forth children, and your desire shall be to your husband, and he shall rule over you. And unto Adam he said, because you have hearkened unto the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In sorrow shall you eat of it all the days of your life. Sorrow. Sorrow everywhere. Sorrow in childbirth. Sorrow in farming. You know, the farmer's got a nice stand out there. Beautiful. Along comes the hail and just wipes it out. Sorrow. Wouldn't have happened in the Garden of Eden. But now we have sorrow. Because man brought sin into the world. Then we have more problems. 18. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to you. You shall eat the herb of the field. I know what that's like. I planted the grass, done the best I could, just worked at it, got a nice stand coming up. Along comes that crabgrass, and it's taken over everywhere. I know how Adam feels. It drives you crazy. You fight it, and you fight it, and you fight it, and here it comes. So, he said, in the sweat of your face, I know how that feels too, you shall eat bread, and you shall return unto the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and unto dust you shall return. So this is Yahweh's stipulation now. This covenant is unilateral, which Yahweh declared to Adam what his lot now is going to be in life. what it's going to be like living in sin in the world. The conditions are going to exist until the kingdom, according to Romans 8:21. There's no appeal. There's no appeal of these conditions. The outcome is entirely based on Yahweh, and it's under his control. The elements of the covenant are going to be there. You're going to have Satan after you. You're going to have problems. He's going to send a redeemer, but that's a special situation. For most people in the world, this is how it's going to be. The multiplied sorrow and pain in childbirth and motherhood is also brought up. Prior to the fall, woman's position in comparison to man's was subordinate due to Adam's ordained headship. And Yahweh, of course, created him first. After the fall, firmer headship was invested in the man due to her responding negatively to Yahweh and positively to Hasatan. Man then would have to earn his living by the sweat of his brow, and his life would be filled with sorrow, heartache. Ultimately, he would have to die, which wasn't there in the beginning. They had the potential to live indefinitely. There was no end of life because there was no sin. Sin brings in death. There was no sin. Perhaps the most significant curse was the spiritual death which Adam and Eve experienced on the day that they ate of that fruit. To emphasize that, to punctuate it, what did Yahweh do? He put a flaming cherub right there to restrict the covenant by force. And it was a testimony to man's utter failure. Utter failure. You look at that and you think, man, I blew it. Look at that. There's no way I can get in there now. I blew it. Well, man blew it, all right. All the way up to Noah, you have the Noahic covenant, Genesis chapter 9. This covenant repeats some of the features of the Adamic covenant. Like the Adamic one, it is unconditional, and it reveals Yahweh's purpose for the human race subsequent to Noah. He was going to establish capital punishment for murder, for taking one's life. The flesh of animals could be reaffirmed for food, Genesis chapter 9, verse 3 and 4. You have the covenant with Noah also, including the prophecy concerning the descendants of his three sons, and designated Shem, whose name, by the way, means name, the Shemites, or the people of the name, as the righteous line, who through him, Yahshua, would come. That the world would rest in the hands of these men. They would be the ones that would give rise to the world, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, even the all the different nationalities, all the different peoples of the world. And Yahweh says, I'm going to seal it with a rainbow. I often wonder, why didn't you have a rainbow before then? Rainbow is only created simply when, you know, clouds drop water from the sky. And the sunlight hits it, splits it up into a prism. Hitting that rain, it makes the, you know, colors appear. Splits the light. Because before then, you didn't have rain, did you? And that takes a lot of faith. Yahweh says, I'm going to make it rain. Noah says, what? What's rain? He could have said, I'm going to make it gleeb. For all he knew, he didn't know what that was. Because it said the mist came up out of the ground and watered everything. Well, Yahweh says, now we're going to make it rain. And because of that, then, we have the rainbow, which you couldn't see before, because we had this canopy of mist vapor over us. And some believe that's why everybody lived so long back then. You didn't have the harmful rays of the sun. You know, rays of the ultraviolet light can be quite damaging. It'll disinfect things, you know. When you set it out in the sunlight, it'll tear apart the DNA of those little germs and everything. But anyway, it does the same thing to us too, by the way, in our skin. And that's how you get sunburn and all that. But anyway, here we have Yahweh's covenant then with Noah. Then you have the Abrahamic covenant. This is the big one. This is the one that, you know, the world's three great religions claim Abraham as their father. Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Of course, Islam don't elevate him quite as high, but it's the most profound one in the scriptures. The sign of the covenant is circumcision. In response to the question, how may I know that I will possess it, Yahweh establishes a solemn vow, covenant, with Abraham. And there's no ifs and or anything about it in the formal declaration in Genesis chapter 15. So let's go there and look at that. The Abrahamic covenant. It's interesting that Yahweh deals with mankind, and especially with his people, through covenant agreements. Unbreakable, or they're supposed to be, agreements. And he said unto him, I am Yahweh that brought you out of the Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit. And he said, Yahweh Elohim, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said unto him, take me an heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece against another, but the birds divided he not. And when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abraham drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. And lo, an horror of great darkness and fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, know of a surety that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs. And this has ramifications all the way down to our day, doesn't it? Because this is not our world. But we're living in it as strangers, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance. And of course, that's Egypt. And you shall go down to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. Remember, you cut a covenant, you got the animal, and you pass through it. Well, here's Yahweh symbolically, metaphorically, passing through with a burning lamp and a smoking furnace. Interesting. I mean, wouldn't that be something to see? Symbolic of the affliction of Israel, I guess. So he does that. In the same day, Yahweh made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto your seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, and the Kadamites, Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Rephaims, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. And from that point on, we have what we have today in the Middle East, both sides claiming they own that land. And yet Yahweh gave it to Abraham by promise through a covenant. The purpose of the covenant was to prove to Abraham that Yahweh would keep his commitment, I should say, and it guarantees the permanent existence of Yahweh's people and ownership of this promised land. The Abrahamic covenant, it has basically these elements. It's a promise to Abraham that he would have numerous posterity and prosperity, I guess you could add that. But that he would have a personal blessing, we find in Genesis 13 and other places, and that his name would be great. And interesting that the three monotheistic religions also claim him. And that he would personally be a blessing. Personally be a blessing to the earth. Promise of a great nation, which was realized later when Jacob and the 12 tribes came along, remember? So we have a promise of land, promises the entire world through Abraham. Abraham's seed was both physically evident in the Israelite nation, and it's spiritually included in all mankind among those who exercised that kind of faith in Abraham and his promise, I should say, that Yahweh made. A covenant vow, so very important in Yahweh's word. It's a promise a formal promise of Yahweh to a people. It's an anchor, think about it, that holds the whole thing together. The whole relationship between Yahweh and his people is a vow. Even Yahweh in the world through Noah's vow, covenant, you know, that I will no longer destroy this earth with a flood. It applies to everybody. But it's an anchor that holds our relationship together with Yahweh. And because of that, it's unchangeable. If you could change the covenant, then we don't have a mighty one who is committed. We can change the term. You know, people, they can't deal with a certain issue, with a certain evil in this world, so what do? They just change the law. It's no longer an evil anymore. Can't fight drugs, just make them legal. You don't do that with Yahweh. He makes a covenant. It's binding. It's there. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 3. Man is changeable. Man is capricious. Man is fickle. Yahweh's not. Yahweh holds true. When he makes a promise, when he makes a commitment, it's there. It's for everlasting. Oh, certainly there were times when Yahweh had some mercy. He didn't wipe out Israel when he, you know, by all intents and purposes should have because of what they did. But still, the covenant promise is in effect. Chapter 3, verse 15, brethren, I speak after the manner of men. Though it be but a man's covenant, yet if it be confirmed, no man disallows or adds thereto. If you confirm a covenant, especially before Yahweh, between man and man, it's there. It's in full force and effect. And that's why it's so important to have a good name so that you'll be trusted when you make an agreement. And I believe that's why Yahweh held Israel to many of their, every commitment that they made, as we noticed with Jephthah and the others, that if your word is not good enough as the people of Yahweh, then what is? Yahweh would be mocked. And that's why it's so important that we keep our promises as well. We keep our commitments as well. Because ultimately they'll say, oh, he's a believer in this Yahweh, but look how he lives. So look what he says. He doesn't do what he says. He says, I think we read, let's see. Now to Abraham and to his seed were the promises made. He said not, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to your seed, which is Messiah. And this I say, that the covenant that was confirmed before of Elohim in Messiah, the law which was 430 years after, cannot disannul, that it should make the promise of none effect. For if the inheritance be of the law, it is no more of the promise, but Yahweh gave it to Abraham by promise. Wherefore, then, serves the law. It was added because of transgressions, and we're talking, of course, of sacrifices and all these other things. And the washings that, you know, the leaders brought on and added to it. He says, it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. That's the promise, ordained. Directly from Yahweh, sacred, solemn. Then he goes on, now a mediator is not a mediator of one, but Yahweh is one. Is the law then against the promises of Yahweh? No. Yahweh forbid. See, the law doesn't change the covenant with Abraham. The law is not the covenant. The people say, oh, we're under a new covenant now. We don't have to keep those laws. The law isn't the covenant. Covenant is a commitment of Yahweh. The law is there to make sure we understand what it is, what that covenant entails, obedience. But the covenant per se, the covenant itself, was an agreement that Yahweh made. This was just part of it, as it says, was added because of transgressions, sacrifices, and all these other things, because Israel had to make, he had to make Israel sure that they understand what sin was. Sin requires payment. Well, each of us has taken vows, wedding vows, baptismal vows. We've all made promises to one another, different ways. And I thought it'd be important to look at this and see just how important Yahweh sees a promise, a commitment. even when we just make it to each other. All of these Yahweh expects us to abide by, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the situation. And we've seen where, you know, even when it was basically a fraudulent thing, and Israel wasn't, Joshua wasn't, and his people totally without blame because they didn't check it all out first, didn't go before Yahweh. Once they signed on the dotted line, they were held to it. And that's how important it is. We make an agreement with Yahweh through baptism. We say we're going to be faithful to you, Yahweh, in all things. And it's so important to remember that. And don't let things slide. Make sure that your calling and election is sure, because that's what it's all about. May Yahweh bless you.